WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with the second part of our interview with Jay Leno. The host of The Tonight Show has a new memoir called Leading With My Chin, about his early days as a stand-up comic, playing bars, strip joints, comedy clubs, and just about any place that would have him. You were probably one of the most hardworking comics in show business when you were getting started, just performing anywhere and everywhere to get experience. But sometimes you get billed, you'd get booked in really inappropriate places. And my favorite story about that is when you were booked, I guess it was in a Catskill resort at a Hasidic, at an Orthodox Jewish resort.
Yeah, there was this.
You were booked as what? Tonight, Jay Leno, Jewish storyteller.
I was billed as a Jewish storyteller.
What did you do?
This agent in New York would come into the clubs and he'd say, I need a comic this Saturday, pays $50, you know. And I met one time, before I get that story, this guy sent me up to a job and it paid $100 for the weekend. And I thought, well, that's pretty good, $100 for the weekend. And I remember afterwards, the owner of the hotel came over and said, boy, that was very good. You know, normally we don't like to spend $1,200 on an act, but we really enjoyed you. And I realized the agent took, you know, $1,100 commission out of my $100. You know, it's just a nightmare. Anyway, that was the last time I worked from him. The first time, he sends me up to the Catskills at the Lachaim Resort or something like this. And I said, what is it? It's just a nightclub. I said, what kind of, I said, is it mostly, oh, no, go up there. So I finally find this place, and it's all these cabins way back in the woods. And nice people, but it's a Hasidic resort. And I pull in there, and it says on one of these one of those bad signs that, you know, you pull on a trailer and it's got the flashing lights around it. Tonight, Jay Leno, Jewish storyteller. And I go, so I get there and I walk out on stage and it's all Hasidic, you know, and I don't even speak Hebrew or, you know. And I said, listen, it's been a big mistake. You know, I'm not really a storyteller. I'm not even Jewish. The guy made a mistake. A lot of, and then this guy, so do your act. Let's see what you do, you know. So I did my, and they were very nice, and I mean they were polite. You know, you just, you know, I felt bad for them, and they felt bad for me, and they were nice people. It just, it wasn't what they had bought. You know, you know, it was a horrible job.
You know, I think it's funny in your book you talk about how when you were getting started in comedy, or maybe this was even before you got started, when you were growing up, that comics meant adult guys, usually from New York, usually Jewish, who spoke more to your father than they spoke to you.
That's true. When I was a kid, you had Alan King, you had Rodney Dangerfield. And these guys were always funny, but they always came from the point of view, at least to me, was these kids today with the long hair. You can't tell the boys from the girls, I tell you. You know, and all that was funny. My father would laugh at that. And then I remember seeing Robert Klein and George Carlin and David Brenner and Steinberg, and these guys would come out. And suddenly I noticed I was laughing more than my dad because their humor was coming more from my point of view, especially Robert Klein. He was a guy who was, I felt, like me, middle class, normal parents, not crazy, not rich, not poor, just normal. You know, watched the same TV shows as a kid that I watched, joked about the same kind of things that I watched. And that was a big change in comedy, at least for me.
So how did you figure out where your material was going to be?
I figured it out from watching those guys. You know, I said to myself, boy, these guys make fun of the same kind of things that I think are funny. These are the same things I talk about with my friends. I mean, prior to them, I don't think you would have seen Alan King come on the Ed Sullivan show and do jokes about Jimi Hendrix. You know, it just didn't happen. You know, it didn't happen.
No, it would be about Jimi Hendrix mowing his lawn.
Right. Jimi Hendrix with a hair like that, you know. But, I mean, suddenly here were guys on mainstream television talking about things only kids, you know, now adults buy Rolling Stone albums, you know what I'm saying? But
back
in the 70s, there were adult records, you know, which you had Henry Mancini and Frank Sinatra, and then you had, for the kids, you know, the Rolling Stones and the Beatles, whatever. And nobody ever did jokes about the Beatles on mainstream television. These were the first comedians to sort of parody younger people's lifestyles.
You know, we were talking about how hardworking you were as a young comic, just trying out everything that you could, playing every place you could play. When you moved to Los Angeles, you moved there before you had a home, before you had any money. And you often ended up just like sleeping on the steps of the comedy clubs or sleeping in the alleys by the comedy clubs.
I used to get picked up in L.A. for vagrancy. And what the cops would do is they just put you in the back of the car and you just drive around with them on their shift all night. And being a comic, you know, this worked, well, somewhat to my advantage, but actually, no. The first time I got picked up, you know, they'd see, let's move along. Where do you live? I don't kind of live anywhere. All right, get in the car. What do you do? I'm a comedian. Oh, yeah? Tell us a joke, you know. Then you'd sort of try and come up with every dirty joke you could think of to tell these cops all night. And har, har, that was Lila. And then that worked pretty good. Well, they let me go. But then two or three nights would go by, and the cops would go, hey, are you that comedian guy our partner picked up the other night? Yeah, you get in the car. All those jokes you were telling. So, you know, two or three nights a week, I have to ride around until dawn telling jokes to different cops because they would say, hey, have you seen that kid on the street? Pick him up. He's got some funny jokes.
My guest is Jay Leno, and he has a new memoir called Leading With My Chin. The memoir has a companion CD with Jay Leno reading from the book, also called Leading With My Chin. Let's take a short break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Jay Leno, and he has a new memoir called Leading With My Chin. Like most young comics, your ambition when you were starting out was to eventually get onto The Tonight Show.
Yeah.
What was the most memorable part of your first shot on The Tonight Show?
Most memorable would be, I got heckled my first shot, which was a horrible experience. But luckily, I'd worked a lot of clubs, so I could deal with that. And Johnny seemed to like that. But our producer, who was still with NBC in The Tonight Show to this day, Fred DeCordova, he would say to you, okay, here's the deal. He would come over and he would say, and Fred was somewhat of a legendary figure, having, you know, directed Jack Benny and all these people. He would say, after you do your stand-up routine, if I go like this, waving my hands towards me, that means come over and sit down to Johnny. If I put my hand up like this, stay on your mark. If I wave you away, go behind the curtain. But whatever you do, don't move until you get my signal. I said, yes, sir. I walk out, I do my routine. Thank you, good night. Big laughs. Hannah, thank you very much. I look over and I see Fred about to signal me and his phone rings. And I see him, hello? Now he's talking and I don't know what to do. And the audience is now getting into that, you know, down to that odd one or two claps. And I'm still standing there. So the applause picks up a little bit more as if people are going, oh, all right, just get lost, will you? You know, and I'm going, hi. And he's talking away, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da. Now the applause is all but stopped. Fred puts the phone down. He looks over, completely forgetting. Oh, come here. Come on. Oh, thank you. You know, I realize it was only maybe 6-7 seconds. But, of course, to me, I might as well have been out there an hour and a half at this point, just hanging, waiting to get Fred's signal to come over and sit down next to Johnny. So that was pretty scary.
On your first shot on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, did he laugh at your jokes?
Yeah, he was very good, actually. He was a terrific audience. I mean, that's what The Tonight Show is. It's not trying to get the audience to laugh. It's trying to get Johnny to laugh.
Right.
But, you know, the audience gets the cue from the host.
Right.
And if Johnny is laughing, they're enjoying it more.
Did Johnny Carson give you advice about your stand-up act or later on about guest hosting or hosting when you took over?
Not so much about hosting, but he did about, the first time I did The Tonight Show. Well, actually, I was a guy that was sort of the last of my graduating class to do The Tonight Show. By graduating class, I mean all the guys I sort of started with, Robin Williams and, Letterman and guys like George Miller and so many of the comics, they all did it before me. And, you know, Johnny came in one night at the Improv to see me. Harvey Korman brought him in. And, you know, there are two kind of comedians. There are comedians that have a lot of attitude and not many jokes. There are comedians that have a lot of jokes but not much stage persona. By attitude, I mean those kind of comics can get on stage and go, hey, pal, nice hat. All right, what did you win? Did somebody guess your weight? You know, that kind of thing. And they're loud and they're boisterous and they're just funny in their nature, but there are no jokes. And then there are other comedians like, you take a guy like Stephen Wright, who are just natural joke writers. You know, very monotone. They tell the joke a certain way. And to me, the best comedians are the ones that combine both those elements. You have a joke and you have an attitude. I remember Johnny came to see me and he said, you know, he thought I was funny, but I wasn't ready for the show because my jokes were too far apart. You know, I didn't quite understand what he meant, but I listened. And then I started watching his monologue, and I realized, you know, he was doing 15 or 20 jokes in a space where I was doing 5. I mean, I could get on stage and being sort of physically big and loud and imposing, I could get a laugh where there wasn't any. But that really, that was great for a nightclub, but not for TV. You know, the idea being on television, if the joke doesn't work, your funny attitude will carry you through. And if your funny attitude doesn't carry you through, your joke will carry you through. And if they both work, you got a killer joke, you know?
Now, how do you work up your opening monologue?
How?
Well, and how do you feel, and also how do you feel about having writers writing with you? I'm sure during the years that you were doing clubs, you were writing all your own material. And
I was writing all my own stuff, and there's this arrogance that a lot of comedians had, and I certainly have it, or at least had it. You know, well, I can do this. I can handle it. I mean, you know, it's a bit, comedians tend to be like Democratic presidents. They think they can handle the whole thing themselves, you know. You know, I always said the Republicans elect stupid presidents and brilliant staffs, and Democrats elect brilliant presidents and stupid staffs. And it's the same thing. Comedians are like that. They come in and say, I can handle it. Like the first 15 to 20 times I hosted the Tonight Show, I said, I don't need cue cards. I'll memorize it. And I did okay. But then I realized this is ridiculous. If you're going to do this every day, you can't memorize, you know, 11 and a half minutes worth of jokes. I mean, you'll go nuts. You'll go crazy trying to do this. And then I gradually got into it. And now the way it works is, well, we tape the show from 5 to 6. Then we have a meeting. I go home at maybe 7:30, 8 o'clock. 9 o'clock, I start to put the monologue together. 11 o'clock, Jimmy Brogan, he's the guy working on the monologue. We go through maybe 500 or 600 jokes that we've prepared that day, or everybody's prepared. And they're not all jokes. Some are just punchlines. Some are just setups. Some are... Did you hear about the guy who did this odd thing in Iowa? Question mark. We try to make a joke out of that. Sometimes it's a complete joke from a writer. Anyway, we'll try and put at least half the monologue together by 2 or 3 in the morning. And then I get into work about 8:30, and through the course of the day, and you're writing jokes constantly as you're picking the red M&Ms out of some rock group's, you know, dressing room, because whatever, you know, you're still dealing with show business people, you know.
You used to be very close with David Letterman. I think you used to write for his show.
No, I didn't write for his show. Dave and I used to write for Jimmy Walker on Good Times.
Oh. So it must be very strange to be rivals now and to have both have these kind of like publicity machines in front of you and between you, you know, getting between
whatever
relationship.
Well, you know,
it
seems like it should be odd. I mean, it seems like it should be more fun to me, but...
More fun than it is?
Well, you know, both these networks have huge amounts of money riding on these things.
Right.
And, you know, the odd thing is when we were losing by less than a rating point. Now that we're winning by less than a rating point. But America has this rather bizarre mentality that is number one, and then number two is a million miles away, bloodied and beaten into the ground. And it's not that way. Both these shows are extremely successful, and both make a lot of money. If one year one show makes a couple of million dollars more than the other, so what? Who cares? I mean, late night television is better because both these shows are on. You know, I mean, the more live new programming you have at late night, the more revenue comes to these stations. You know, late night used to be dead. There was Johnny Carson, and that was it. But believe me, if there was only one show, it would probably be on 3 or 4 nights a week, and it would be 10 weeks a year off. Now both shows literally kill themselves trying to put the best shows on the air that they can with the most new entertainment and the funniest jokes they can come up with. I mean, sometimes we both overdo it and go nuts, but hey, that's competition. That's the nature of it. I mean, to me, nothing would be funnier than to switch shows one night. I mean, to have Dave walk out on my stage and me walk out on his stage simultaneously would seem like the funniest thing in the world. But, you know, it couldn't happen because, I don't know, networks would go nuts or something, or hey, I would love to go on Dave's show and do What's My Beef segment like I used to do in the early days. But then NBC would say, oh, your Tonight Show ratings will go down that night. We'd have to put a rerun on. The CBS's ratings will be huge. Or vice versa. So you just sort of have this odd kind of standoff thing that goes on, which seems rather silly to me. Because I'm a fan of Dave's show. I watch it probably 3 or 4 nights a week. And sometimes I think we had the better joke. And sometimes I think, ah, you know, Dave had the better joke on that one. I mean, what it comes down to is he makes me laugh. And the other thing is there are only 3 or 4 people that you can actually joke about this job with because they're people who have done it. Arsenio Hall, Letterman, Pat Sajak, Johnny. There's only a few people out there that when you bring up a certain phrase or a certain guest, that know exactly what you're talking about. And it's odd that we can't all get together and laugh about that the way we used to when we were stand-up comedians.
You strike me as more secure, less insecure than a lot of comics.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty secure that way.
Less neurotic?
No, I'm not neurotic at all, actually. I'm not neurotic at all. I mean, you know, Rich Lewis is a friend of mine, and he, you know, I watch him agonize. You know,
right.
He agonizes over every little thing. What's the joke? You like that joke. You know, Rich will say, here's a joke. He'll tell you the joke, and you go, eh, it's funny. No, you didn't think it was funny. It was funny. Yeah, how funny was it? It was really funny. No, it wasn't that funny. You're being polite. And this will go on for days. It'll go on for weeks if you let it. And, you know, I said to myself, my God, where does that come from?
So you don't understand neurosis?
Well, I mean, I understand it, and I'm lucky I don't necessarily suffer from it.
You're kind of famous for hating vacations, for not liking to not work. You like to work a lot. Is that still true, that you still don't like vacations?
I'm not a vacation guy. You know, I was somewhat dyslexic as a kid, and I always remember my mom saying to me, well, you're just going to have to work that much harder than the other kids to get the same thing. And when you brought up being insecure before, I never thought I was insecure. I just thought I was being lazy. And that may sound silly, but to me, if something didn't work, it didn't work because I wasn't working hard enough. Like when the whole thing with The Tonight Show was going on, is Jay going to be replaced? Is he going to get fired? They're going to replace him with Letterman. Well, obviously 16 hours a day is not enough. Maybe I need to do 18 hours a day. And it worked, you know. I mean, that's what works for me. You know, I never said I was the best. I never said I was the funniest. I just said, I will work at this harder than anybody else. And that seems fair. I mean, that's sort of the American way, you know. I've always been a guy that worked on commission. Even when I was washing cars or had regular jobs, I was never a salary guy. I was always the kind of guy that would say, listen, why don't you pay me by whatever? You know, when I took over the Tonight Show, when I used to go into bars with the $50. If you think it's good, pay me what you think it's worth. And eventually, do you get screwed at the beginning? Yeah, but everybody gets screwed at the beginning. You know, to this day, people say, oh, you're getting screwed. Really? I mean, I do very well. I've hosted the Tonight Show. I got the job I wanted. I mean, it's what works for me. And in my mind, if I'm one of those guys, like if I take a, you know, I went to Hawaii once. This was like a nightmare. I was doing a gig in Hawaii. And I had to stay down there like 3 days. And the second day, I'm sitting on the beach, and I look at my watch, 10 o'clock. I'm sitting on the beach about 4 hours, and I look at my watch, and it's 10:30, and I go, great, my watch broke. The battery's dead. And I asked them, what time is it? And they said, it's 10:30. And I said, really? I've only been sitting here for half an hour? I thought it was like 2 o'clock. This is like a nightmare. Get me out of here. And, I'm not a vacation guy.
It must be strange for you, knowing so many comics so well and having been in the position of being a young, hardworking comic really wanting their big break, to now be the guy who could give a young, hardworking comic
a big
break.
Oh, man, it's a nightmare.
And I'm sure you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. On the other hand, you want to have the best show you possibly can. So it's probably a really awkward spot.
No, it's horrible because I used to think, well, now that I'm hosting The Tonight Show, I can go anywhere. But now you can't go anywhere because you walk in and you go, oh, gee, there's Larry. I got to hide. You know, I mean, that's what it is. I mean, you know, you have friends that come up to you that, you know, it's when I first got the job, men, women, comedians would come up to me and they go, hey, Jay, you know, Johnny would never put me on, but now you got the show. It'll be great, man. I can come on all the time. And I'd have to say, but, you know, if you weren't good enough to get on with Johnny, it's not good enough to get on with me. You got to make it funnier. And, you know, I lost a lot of friends that way. I mean, it's just there are people that I love dearly as friends, but the material is not strong enough, or maybe it's really old-fashioned, you know. It's just, you know, old jokes about, I don't know, hippies or airline food or whatever it is. And you just say, you know, you got to update the stuff. And they just don't get it.
Jay Leno, his new memoir is called Leading With My Chin. He also has a new CD on which he reads from the book. This is Fresh Air.